Is it gonna be cornfields or Cadillacs? Subway rails or railroad tracks? Slow bar swing, five lane fast track, dirt road.
Members of the Stone Cold Shots universe, welcome to Stone Cold Shots. It's the wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every episode we review and we revisit a wrestling pay-per-view. Could be from any time, could be from any promotion. Today we are doing, by fan request, by fan vote, the In Your House Canadian Stampede from WWF from 1997. Thanks to everybody who suggested, thanks to everybody who voted. If you're listening to this on the day that it comes out, you have mere days to vote on our current poll. So head right over, stop what you're doing, pause this podcast.
Stop it, throw your phone out the window.
Head to our Facebook page, facebook.com/stonecoldshots, and make a suggestion for our current poll, or smash that motherfucking like button on somebody else's suggestion.
And you gotta hit that subscribe. We need those views. We need those likes.
With me today, why don't you guys introduce yourselves? Tell me, what Canadian celebrity would you line up for a mile to meet?
Holy shit. Well, I'm the internet treasure, the internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor. I would line up for at least a mile for Shania Twain.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, sorry. This is celebrity or WWE celebrity?
Oh. Any Canadian celebrity.
Oh, Jesus. I'm still going to limit it to wrestling because that's what I'm mentally prepared for.
So, just say Rick Moranis. There's only two Canadian celebrities worth meeting. Shania Twain and Rick Moranis.
Wow. I would line up for a real long time to meet, like, Kevin Owens.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And what's your name?
Oh, okay. My name is Lauren Maxine.
Rude.
I'm a regular darling. You can just edit that so that's first.
I'm not going to.
A regular darling and an exceptional librarian.
I'm Campbell Falconer, and I would line up for a mile to hit every member of the Bare Naked Ladies with a stunner for kicking out Stephen Page.
Wow. Would you line up for a 1 week?
That was very good.
Thank you.
All right.
Off to a hot start.
Off to a very hot start. It's a little rusty. We haven't done this in a while. This is also the first pape that Lauren and I have watched together.
Rude.
I know. So. Campbell has a very strict rule that we usually never watch them together because it would ruin the pod, you see.
I gotta keep these takes hot.
Exactly.
These takes gotta stay hot.
If we shared our thoughts.
And you two are colluding. Listen, I read the Mueller report. I mean, you guys are some kind of colluding going on.
Mueller.
I'm going to be blindsided with hot takes against my hot takes. This whole thing's going to be hot takeless.
We did. It was a very silent
night.
Yeah,
I will have you know,
we barely
Josh
spoke to each other.
And our beloved viewers at home in the Stone Cold Shots universe, we sat in absolute silence, side by side on the couch, taking notes. It was a
can't wait for this
loveless affair.
Shit show.
It was maybe the least fun I've ever had watching wrestling before.
Whoa.
But I do it. Wow. I do it for you, for the people.
He has more fun watching it by himself than with me. Like than when I'm in the room with him.
Well, it goes top tier watching with you, normal style.
Go on.
Second tier watching with you after you've fallen asleep during the main event.
So like every single night, but towards the end of the night.
Third okay. tier watching by myself, taking notes, crushing a beer. Uh-huh. And bottom tier watching with you in awkward silence as we both take notes studiously.
Yeah, no wonder I fell asleep, folks.
And P.S., that was a pretty good save. I'm just going to say you're in trouble there for a second.
Anyway, let's get to In Your House Canadian Stampede, as mentioned, voted by you, the listeners, suggested by JP Sebastian. Thank you very much.
You're the real general manager community.
So, if you've listened to this podcast at all, you know that Lauren and I were not watching wrestling in the 90s.
So, this is from 1997, right?
Yep. This is brand new to us. But, Josh, where were you in the hot summer of 97?
Oof, I was in Ottawa. You know, fat kid, so I was probably eating pizza. Probably eating a lot of pizza at that time and watching this with a nice Coca-Cola. And, this is when, for me, this is when wrestling really picked up.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, Bret Hart was a Canadian hero.
Yep.
They had Austin picking up steam in the States. You know, he's just starting to do that turn. They just did that double turn at WrestleMania where Stone Cold became the good guy, Bret mm-hmm. became the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
So Bret was booed pretty much everywhere in the United States. But when he came to Canada, you know, the place came unglued every time he came out, right? So, like, he was our hero. And then we booed Austin, and in the States, Austin was a good guy. And they booed Bret. That's pretty much it.
Cool. So how do you remember liking this at the time? Like, was this, like, a top tier of the In Your Houses?
In Your Houses were such garbage, man.
So that's, yeah, can you kind of explain? Because, like, I don't really get the whole, like, In Your House thing. I don't really understand the context of that.
Well, when the pay-per-views first started going, there was only, like, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, maybe one more that I'm missing. But
you had, like, your big four.
Yeah, like, and so when they wanted to start doing, like, kind of like a monthly thing for people to start paying for,
mm-hmm.
they released In Your Houses. And In Your Houses weren't the regular pay-per-view cost. I think a pay-per-view was $40, and In Your House was only $9.99.
Ooh, $9.99.
Not just $9.99. And then I think they bumped it up to $19.99, and they were, like, kind of testing that out.
Okay.
So they did this In Your House run for a while, and, like, everyone had a different, like, In Your House, Beware of Dog, In Your House, Mind Games, In
yeah.
Your House.
Yeah, so, like, we were, like, looking through the network, looking at the titles, they were all really fun. It seems like it was kind of like a 2.5 year sort of stint to where, like, yeah. I was looking at it and I was like, okay, this is the gap where Mania was, this is the gap where yeah. like this was,
and that really, like, the format we see now with, like, a monthly, like, kind of like Backlash or whatever it is, that all started with the In Your Houses. So
yeah, so this In Your House, we start with a little, like, kind of Shades of Grey promo about Hart and Stone Cold stemming from WrestleMania 13.
That was cool. It was, like, really epic. It was very, like, in a world.
Stone Cold.
This was all of the promo packages in this. I feel like we're not really firing on all cylinders. They didn't quite hit, like, a My Way or a Monster. Honestly, it reminded me of, like, the, you know that Simpsons episode where it goes, "Open wide for some soccer!" Like, that was a thing where, like, like, I've seen that Simpsons episode a million times, and, like, I've finally seen the thing that they're parodying,
yeah.
you know? Like, everybody has heard the, like, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. This is the first time I've actually seen the Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
And I think they use that guy for every voiceover like that, for everything. Not just wrestling, like, for movies, for because that guy was, like, all over everything. And then, like, when I was listening to it, I'm like, oh, yes, I remember the golden days of openings.
Yeah. So this kind of sets the stage for, like, I get, like, they were kind of playing to their audience. They knew that they were in Canada. They knew that, like, the Hart Foundation was going to get cheered. Stone Cold and company were going to get booed. It was kind of, like, setting up the whole, like, oh, like, nobody's a good guy and nobody's a bad guy.
Like, it's like, this is where the Bizarro Land thing for Canada. It's like, whoa, they're booing people they usually cheer. And, you know, it's like, it's all bets are off in Canada, you yeah. know, no matter what these crazy bad guys do.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is, like, too much from kind of a modern lens, but felt a little to me like a failure to kind of, like, commit to their bit and commit to their product. You know? That, like, nowadays you get someone like a Sami Zayn coming out who's playing a heel character, but, like, he came back at the Superstar Shakeup in Montreal, and it wasn't like they were like, oh, it's Shades of Grey. Like, they were just like, no, Sammy's a heel. He's going to cut a heel promo on Montreal. And he's going to do everything in his power to get the hometown crowd to boo him.
I think that goes along with, like, our smarky ways now. Like, in more modern times where we're so much more informed about, like, booking and all of this. I think because we're so much more aware of all that, then we have a higher suspension of disbelief, and we're able to separate, like, the characters from the people, and, like, able to be like, this is a character playing, like acting as a heel, basically. So we love Sami Zayn because he's from Canada and mm-hmm. he's ours, and we love him no matter what he does in ring, in character. I feel like I know that at this point, like, in 1997, people were aware that it was scripted and all of this, but I mm-hmm. feel like
But it was still a little bit
to
more...
To a different degree.
Like, oh, Bret Hart's from Canada, he's our guy no matter what. Like,
yeah.
Sort of committing
to... Just a harder buy-in.
Okay.
And it's also, like, it's really tough now for there to be actual heels, right?
Totally.
Because we do know so much about these people. Like, mm-hmm. we know Sami Zayn. We know he's, like, a goofy music guy who's, like, really quirky.
Yeah.
And he's, like, you know, really sweet and lovable and doing all these awesome things for
Shades of Grey because the two-tone from his checkered Vans have blended together.
But then, like, even if he comes out and shits on Montreal and he's in Montreal or whatever mm-hmm. he does...
They're going to boo the promo, but they're not booing Sammy.
Exactly.
Right?
But back then, it was like, it was legit. Like, mm-hmm. Bret Hart was our guy in Canada. And you could put anybody. And it didn't matter if it was a legit guy that we would have cheered on. Could have been Undertaker in there, which, you know, as you saw, like, place lost their mind for. Mm-hmm. But you put anyone across the ring from Bret Hart when he's in Canada or any of the Hart Foundation, they're getting, like, legit heat.
Right.
Like, you can go fuck yourself, America.
Okay. Cool. So we get this, like, In Your House Canadian Stampede cattle brand sort of logo opening that I felt like I just got, like, a spare at a bowling alley when that came up.
That's great.
And they keep that sort of graphic up for all of the, like, interstitials and everybody's names. We're introduced to our announce team. Featuring Vince McMahon, pre-Mr. McMahon character.
Yeah, and they're all wearing their 10 gallons, and I think Jerry Lawler's wearing like a 20-gallon hat.
Jerry Lawler's wearing a fucking 100-gallon hat. My God.
So dumb.
It was so dumb. But like, everybody was wearing these 10-gallon hats. Even yeah. Howard Finkel in the ring was wearing one. Yeah. I was a little disappointed the referee wasn't wearing one, actually, like during the match.
Do you think JR was kind of mad at everybody, being like, hey, this ain't a fucking joke? Like...
Anything to take the piss out of JR back in the day.
This is some serious yeehaw shit. Like, right in the middle of... I feel like right now, in 2019, we are in the middle of a sort of cultural yeehaw renaissance. What with Lil Nas X
oh, wow.
and the Old Town Road, you yeah. know? This
I
felt,
don't know
this felt very... You know that song that you hate with Billy Ray Cyrus?
Oh, yeah. I hate that song.
Anyway, I guess we can just move on to the first match.
Yeah, 100%. So Triple H comes out to Ode to Joy.
Hey, Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Oh, is not Triple H yet.
Yeah. I didn't recognize that Motorhead song.
I've never seen Triple H from this era, like Hunter Hearst Helmsley. I've never seen, Ode to Joy, what? And he's so young and lean and blonde. Like, mm-hmm. I love this whole look on him. It's great.
He's very handsome.
Comes out in, like, a sequin, like, black robe with green sequin accents. And mm-hmm. it was
yeah.
sick.
He was doing the kind of, he's built from Connecticut. Which Vince is from, and Vince yeah. prides himself like a man of the people. So he's like, oh, everybody hates these snobs from Connecticut. So he's billed as like a rich guy.
Yeah.
And JR even says, oh, do you think this guy ever tried to buy the company? Which in retrospect is a pretty funny line.
Yeah. Well, I think speaking of like sort of things to come, like he's got China as a bodyguard here,
yeah,
which was really cool. Like the little, this was I don't think we said this off the top, but like the theme for our poll this month was like your favorite like sort of B pay-per-view from the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at this, like this is kind of like very proto Attitude Era. Like they're setting up all the pieces, they have all the players, and they're just not in the right positions yet.
You nailed it. So this is just before Triple H started DX with Shawn, right?
Yeah.
The NWO was going hard on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they started to get a little bit more edgy with their booking. You know, they started running with, like, Steve Austin a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, but this is just after the turn that Steve did at, again, like, WrestleMania with Bret.
Totally, where you get kind of, like, the anti-hero as the face. And again, so you have, like, your Stone Cold as kind of, like, the main event
yeah.
guy. You have, like, Triple H out here with China, like, showing a little bit of color. There's, like, a few kind of goofy nut shots in this match.
Yeah.
It was all of these things that they were just starting to pepper it in and just kind of, like... Let it all come, like, simmer, start to come to a boil, like, we've all seen, like, WrestleMania 17, we've all seen peak Attitude Era things. This was a really fun exercise in going back and sort of seeing, like, how they built to it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Totally. And I think it's really started, like, when Bret got, you know, when he quit in, I think it was November that year.
Yep.
So we're only like, you know, 4 or 5 months out.
Yeah, we're like 4 months out from the Montreal Screwjob.
Right?
Whoa.
And that was the official kind of start of the Attitude Era.
Shit, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That it was that impending.
Yeah.
Speaking of, like, China looks dope as shit.
Yeah, hell yeah.
The bondage belt and like miniskirt, like every punk chick in like 2019 dresses, like owes such a debt to China.
Absolutely. Like,
she's pulling sick. That look.
And she's so nonchalant the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
We got Mankind coming out. Also to kind of an orchestral theme. I was really jonesing for the riffs here.
What's
you know?
Up with like, yeah, what's up? Is that, I'm not super familiar with yeah. Mankind. Mankind as Mick Foley, like I'm not super familiar with him.
Please, Mick Mankind was his father.
But like, is that Mankind's theme?
Yeah,
this, like, really non-epic, like, ambient, like...
So this is actually pretty cool. So Mankind, so he'd come out to that theme, and then after the match was done, it would be, like, a lullaby song to calm him down after the match. So, like, that would, like, bring him out, like, that, like, really haunting kind of, like...
Yeah,
it felt... Oh, shit, that's so cool.
And then, like, after it, like, he'd rock in the ring, and, like, there'd be, like, just a light on him, and, like, there'd be this, like, lullaby yeah. kind of...
Whoa, yeah. That's so cool!
It is cool.
I did not know that, yeah. and that makes me really like that theme now.
Yeah. This match.
It's actually a non-match.
Yeah.
In that it doesn't have an end.
It does end in a double count out. Kind of skipping ahead here a little bit, but...
I'm sorry.
No, but like, it was interesting to watch this match and like watch Mick Foley move like a regular human being.
Yeah.
It was so... Because it's so sad to watch him now try to get like up and down stairs.
Totally.
Try to get like in and out of the
totally.
Ring.
Totally. I still think he's not as bad as other... wrestlers
yeah,
of his
sure.
era.
Mm-hmm. But like, you know, just to see him work in a match, I was like, I almost forgot... how good Mick Foley was as a worker.
Mm-hmm. His man, that he does that like elbow drop to the outside,
yeah.
which was like mm-hmm. the signature like WCW Cactus Jack yeah. move, and I was like, damn, that fucking rules. Like,
and he truly has no regard for his own body. Like mm-hmm. you can tell the way he like leans into this
yeah.
this stuff, and like, you know, the way he took he was running towards Triple H at one point, and Triple H moved, and China gave him like kind of a slam hip toss into the steps.
Yep.
And
that
China
was sick.
China like threw him, and Mick Foley just like threw his body into the steps with like no real regard,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of started the story with the match, where it's like, you know, Nick Foley's
his knee
yeah. knee was fucked up all match, right?
Triple H is working the knee. He's literally been working the knee for fucking like 20 years.
Yeah,
like God.
Well, it worked.
Yeah. Actually, I felt like this match had like moments that were really great.
Yeah.
But overall, this felt like a very kind of antiquated, like this was the 90s hanging on to kind of like 80s style wrestling
mm-hmm.
is kind of what it felt like, you know?
Yeah, yeah, like Triple H kind of prides himself on being like that old school wrestler type. Like he's a real throwback, and that's mm-hmm. how he always kind of like saw himself.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see so much of that influence on him in this match, right? Like just like the way he was working the leg, kind of like, you know, the holds he was doing, even like the basic like wrestling stuff, it was all like very throwback.
Yeah.
And he was an interesting clash, you know, at times of the match with like Mick Foley's like a little bit more like caution to the wind style.
Mm-hmm.
And it made for I don't know, it was, the match was fine.
It was okay.
It was just kind of a...
I feel like it picked up. Like my first impression was it was very fast paced, but yeah. not super impressive.
Oh.
But like, especially with a modern lens. But then as it went on, it got more exciting as they sort of went out of the ring a bit more. And then they eventually left the ring and the whole ring area.
Well, I will shout out before they have the double count out and they go to fight in the penalty box. I think one commentary team, specifically JR, did a great job of talking up the mandible claw.
Yeah.
Right? And like talking about how like devastating that move was, and how it was like he, like, I think he says something like, oh, you know, Mankind just can't wait to sink his fingers down the throat of Triple H.
The gullet.
Yeah, the gullet.
Yeah.
And so there's a spot here where Triple H is on the outside and he goes for like a sunset flip powerbomb that Mankind counters right into the mandible claw.
Yeah.
I marked out for that. That was a dope spot.
Yeah. Like, you know what? I did not have time for this match. The referee can fucking get it on this one. Referee, is fucking blind, and like there's no excuses
yeah.
for how blind the ref was. There was like one spot where like, you know, he's like, Triple H is kind of talking to him, and Mick Foley, I think, is like kind of behind, like between his legs, and China is just in the referee's blind spot and like nails Mankind, and the referee can totally see it.
Yeah.
That happened three times this match.
There were like a lot of chair shots with very minimal distraction. Yeah.
There was one thing that I did really like that the ref did, which was at one point Triple H is, I think it's when he's doing some sort of like figure four on Mankind, and he's using the ropes to as leverage to like put more pressure on Mankind's legs or whatever. And the ref just comes and kicks Triple H's arms off. I was like,
awesome.
Sick work, ref. Like, refs never touch people usually. They're like, don't stop. Like,
now he's got his wits about him, but like,
So ends in a double count out. They fight into the penalty box, which I kind of liked. They had a lot of references to the Calgary Flames in this pay-per-view.
You know, that's
really
a Vince
funny.
Call. It's like everybody like had to say penalty box like two times.
Yeah. How many bald heads did this get?
Because of the kind of shit finish, and it was kind of like a whatever match, I just gave it three bald heads.
I think that's generous.
I don't think it's generous, because if you look at the match, like the match had some good spots in it. It was a fine match, right?
So three is your like... like capable satisfactory grade.
It's a match.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on, we have Taka Michinoko.
Oh my god.
Versus the great Suzuki, according to JR.
Yeah. Taka Michinoko.
So it's Taka Michinoto and the great Sasuke?
Michinoku and the great Sasuke. Yeah.
I never got a coup.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you believe that 20 years down the line, JR would announce an entire Wrestle Kingdom? Like, who the fuck thought that was a good idea with this on his resume?
And like the way they were talking about it was like, oh, this is going to be a Japanese matchup, you know? And like, and they kept on saying these, like,
saying Japanese match.
That was so weird.
Yeah, Japanese match.
And this is the point when like they start saying like, oh, like that's really intense in this country, and like they can, but man, do you think they can even speak English?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, and again, like this was a mild night for that kind of shit.
It
like,
was, saying, but it was rough.
Yeah. And they were saying like Japanese match, like it was a stipulation.
Yeah. Well, and it's the funniest thing. I can't remember what exactly it was, but it like Vince was kind of like the least racist of the entire commentary team.
So what was happening in that part that you're referring to was like, Jerry the King Lawler, I think, is the one who's like, can they even speak English? And then the other one's like, no, I don't think they fucking can, or whatever the fuck.
Jerry
and
Lawler then, can barely speak English. To be fair, redneck.
To be fair, though, they couldn't.
And then our sweet boy, fucking Vince McMahon, is like the diplomatic guy who comes in. He's like, they're like basically just kicking each other's asses, and that works in any language, boys. Like, it was
so
it was
like
cool.
Vince had to come in with the save, but also, Vince didn't know what was going on. I guarantee you that Vince had no idea about either one of these guys, what they were doing in the ring. And Vince is so used to like commentating on like, look at the physique, you know, or something like that. Like, yeah, look at the moves, what a maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know what he was watching, really. And it could really tell, because Vince like laid out a lot for this. Mm. And props to JR.
Mm-hmm.
JR was like, you know, he did his homework. He was like learning about like...
He was talking about Antonio Inoki. Inoki. The only name that he pronounced correctly in that entire match.
But JR was going for it. He was trying.
Yeah.
And like he's like, oh, watch out for the Michinoku driver. And then he was like giving like a little history on like mm-hmm. both of them.
Yeah.
You know, so props to JR on that one, because he's like, he tried.
Totally.
Yeah.
And good on him, because this was like one of my favorite matches of the night.
This match fucking ruled.
Yeah, this match banged.
This style of wrestling, if it, like I talked about how like the last match was kind of a little antiquated, like very much felt like it was kind of clinging on to the 80s.
Yeah.
This match, like if you put this match in the middle of a pay-per-view today,
yep,
it would still be one of the best matches on that pay.
I would recommend everybody go out of their way just to watch this match on the card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to watch one match on the card, I think this is it. Because, again, like Campbell said, this is way ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Like, and they're throwing some stiff shots.
So stiff.
And, like...
That the spinning kick that Sasuke levels Michinoku with.
So, like, the entire match, Sasuke is just fucking kicking that young boy in the head.
Well, but I mean, like, Taka gets some, like, drop kicks to, like, the back of the head. Like you watch, like, a Kenny Omega Okada match where they're throwing, like, drop kicks to the back of the head.
Yes.
And, like, really connecting. It's like, that's in this shit in 1997.
I did, like, at one point, Sasuke was coming up off the top rope outside, and he hit him with this kick, like it's like a Rob Van Dam kick. It's like, oh, great martial arts kick. Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah,
it's all martial arts. Yeah.
They also, I feel like they build like a really good sort of underdog story here, where like Sasuke is kind of like the older, more established veteran. They like talk about how he has the clear advantage, and you get Taka with this like really, really good underdog.
Yeah, and I think Taka was only 22 at this time, and like if you look at Taka's career and his body of work, that's crazy to think about.
Yeah,
because this was 22 years ago.
Yeah, I thought this match was great. There's a really funny like Sasuke hits a moonsault, like a borderline acai moonsault, like very reminiscent of Ultimo Dragon to the outside, and JR tries to compare him to Mankind. which I get from like sort of like the death defying move disregard for the body, but it's like Mankind has never moved like that.
You can kind of see it, right? You kind of see it, and you know, and kudos to these guys. So the match starts off, and before like the bell can even ring, they cut to Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and Mankind fighting in the crowd. So it kind of takes the crowd out of it, right?
It totally caps the momentum of like they've hyped up these two dudes. They've done their entrances.
And the crowd doesn't know who these guys are.
Totally.
You know, it's like, what are we about to see? So like the fans are thinking, is this like kind of like a special attraction match? And then they cut to these two clowns fighting in the penalty box.
Again.
And but like the crowd started off super cold for this one. And by the end of the match, you know, they were able to get everybody back in just based on their performance.
When he hits that Michinoku driver.
Yeah.
Which looked fucked.
It looks devastating.
You know, and like, because that's a move, that's like one of the few sort of pile driver, I'm using air quotes here, moves that like the WWE will currently still allow, right? Like Sami Zayn does a Michinoku driver every now and then.
Yeah, and like the way he hit it was kind of like a brain buster pile driver.
Yeah.
Like kind
The way that Taka hits it and the way that like Sami Zayn hits it are very different. Like, this looked crazy, and I could not believe that it wasn't the finish of the match.
Yeah, that was a great match. And then I thought that was going to be the end, but I think Sasuke was like the kind of more senior guy.
Yeah.
So it's like he wasn't going to let the young boy get the win on a pay-per-view.
Sort of surprising. Like Northern Lights suplex. They had a name for it.
It's like a tiger.
A tiger suplex. Bomb or fire bomb or something like that. I felt like the finish was like a little sudden. The finish kind of fell flat for me.
Did.
But the match itself, hoo boy.
I would say it's a 3 7/8 bald head match.
Jesus.
That was only because of the end. It would have got a 4. Oh, no, Lauren just rolled her eyes and said, Jesus.
Yeah.
Come on now. Yeah, you guys got a problem with the system.
I think
get your own system.
Yeah, Lauren's not crazy about the eighths that have been popping up lately.
Yeah. It's
my rating system.
So we cut back to Mankind and Hunter fighting in the parking lot now, next to a Calgary Flames truck.
Go Flames.
Like, the logo was, like, so prominent there. Like, someone was definitely like, no, set it up.
Yeah.
Bingo.
It's like, they gotta know what's hockey.
Yeah.
Triple H is, like, really bloody at this point.
Triple H is split the fuck open. This felt current.
This is Dean Ambrose running around in the back, like, you know, throwing fucking merch at people.
And Sami Zayn getting thrown into a dumpster.
Yeah, very.
And can I tell you, I think before this, I think this could have been like one of the first times, but they actually weren't actually doing things like this in the WWE at the time or WWF. So this was pretty new and like cutting edge for what they were doing. Mm. But like ECW would always do stuff like that.
Of course.
You know, so it's,
I loved the part when Hunter breaks a shovel over Mankind's back.
I also loved that part. It looked like a legit shovel.
Yeah.
It's not a working shovel.
It wasn't a gimmick shovel. It was great. Very cool. And then they kind of finally split them apart. This was a thing where I thought, I was like, oh, we're going to get a little like brawl between every match, and they broke them apart here and it was just done. Yeah. But it makes sense. It's like, can you imagine like fighting a guy in a parking lot for 2 hours.
We're like, yeah, where else are you gonna go?
So tired.
They're gonna be like 4 blocks away from the venue.
Yeah.
Eventually, like at that rate.
They're gonna go to Edmonton.
Ugh. Yeah, but it's funny. And then like, so that just kind of like ends. And yeah. We can assume they're still fighting to this day. And then Paul Bearer, they show a little clip of him reminding the Undertaker that he killed his family.
Yeah.
Normal man this, Paul Bearer.
This promo was fucking crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I know.
The blocking of how they shot this promo.
Yeah.
Of the, for the people at home, if you haven't watched this, so like, you have the interviewer, and all that you can see of the interviewer is, like, his giant cowboy hat. Because he's interviewing Paul Bearer, but standing directly in front of the man holding the microphone is just Vader, just staring into the camera, flexing.
So good.
While Paul Bearer is doing this buck wild promo about the Undertaker murdering his family to just, like, a hat holding a microphone, as far as you can tell.
Vader was a big boy.
Vader was huge, and it's like, I don't get me wrong, I loved this. Yeah. I thought this was great.
There's nothing more 80s and 90s than like your manager talking and you flexing,
yeah,
or doing whatever in the background. Like,
but this was in the foreground. This was in front of everything. You know, like literally all you can see is like Vader growling and Paul Bearer's crazy facial expressions.
So cool.
Yeah, Vader is this really the Samoa Joe of this era of
Definitely
WWF,
is.
Right? Yeah. So cool.
So cool.
So cool.
Lauren, I didn't buy that.
First of all, it's the first time I've ever seen Vader, period.
Okay.
Never seen this man. It was pretty cool.
What about Boy Meets World?
No. You know I didn't watch TV.
That's everything that I know about Vader comes from Boy Meets World.
Well, Vader was a lot cooler in WCW because he used to have this like huge helmet, and like I think it started in Japan.
Yeah,
and then it would be like almost like a Fallout.
I always thought it was reminiscent of like the Juggernaut's helmet from X-Men. But, like, with shoulder pads.
And then he would take this giant contraption off of his shoulders and over his head, and then he'd put it down in the middle of the ring, and then he'd hit a button, and then, like, steam would blow from it.
That's pretty cool.
It was awesome. Yeah. So, I don't know why they didn't bring that over with him, but this was fine.
It's also, this is also, like, the first, I think this is the first time I've ever really seen Paul Bearer in action. Like, I obviously know who he is, and I know his shtick, but... And he's not actually going full on his shtick tonight, but I've never seen him making a promo or saying anything before, and it was delightful. It was amazing.
I honestly, like, I had down in my notes that, like, I give his acting ringside a chef's kiss.
Yeah.
He was, like,
so good.
Creeping up on the side of the ring like a fucking gremlin.
And he kept on telling the camera guys, like, don't look at me.
Don't look at me. Get out. Watch the match. Yeah.
That was 3D, damn it. Like,
yeah.
He's great. His facial expressions, he's so over the top. Like, it's almost like a throwback to, like, Snidely Whiplash, like Looney Tunes era, like... cartoon villain,
because it's just so over the top.
His expressions, he must have so many fucking muscles in his face.
Paul Bearer is like in his prime, like, and especially when he's doing like the initial build for the Undertaker, all of his promos would be just so like over the top, like, oh yeah, and he'd be like looking to this guy, and then he'd be like, every time the Undertaker talk, he'd like bunch his chin up and then kind of look around like horrified, and his eyes would get big.
He's totally
old. Paul Bearer was great.
Cartoon character.
Definitely.
Like his the way that he's able to manipulate his face and his physical acting is like literally something that you only see in a cartoon.
Absolutely. That's the vibe that I got. It made me really want to go back and watch like everything he's ever done, because it was like totally entrancing.
Yeah.
So we have Vader versus The Undertaker for the WWF Championship. Vader is the challenger. His music hits first. I don't know if you guys saw this, but they were doing kind of a pan across the audience, and it goes, "It's time! It's time!" And there are people fucking booking it down the aisles, like running full out sprint to get back to their seats.
It's like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
I did not see that.
I loved that. And it honestly, like, I feel like this match had a, this was like a heavyweight title match between two big ass dudes. It had a very big fight feel. And from the second they did that pan across, the second that Vader did his like it's time, like it yeah. really you felt it. You know?
Man, I feel so bad for Vader because Vader was so cool and so big and such a like a threat. And like WWF at the time really didn't do anything with him. Like
they... I was saying that he kind of in this match seems to suffer from like Kevin Owens syndrome.
Yeah.
Where it's like you could book this guy as like a demolisher, as an ass kicker.
And they should
have. But like it's that Vince McMahon, like heels have to be cheaters. They got to be cowards.
Yeah.
Like
there was something there, something that just didn't get going on all cylinders. And again, it's too bad because The Undertaker comes out after.
My God.
And that pop. So there's a point where, like, again, the camera's panning. And people are stomping on the ground. Like, you hear the people. And, like, everybody.
You can see the camera shaking.
Physically shake.
Yeah.
I honestly couldn't tell if that was an effect that was put in by the fucking cameraman.
No, that was like, legit.
When there's this really great part where Undertaker is down and he gets up and the fucking stage, like the camera starts shaking. Yeah. And you can hear this thunderous noise, and I couldn't tell if it was an effect that was put in post or like something like the cameramen were literally shaking. Yeah. The camera.
Well, actually
around.
Came out after the cameraman was having a seizure.
Really?
No.
Oh my God, Josh. Every time you do this to me, and I'm always just like,
I almost just had a seizure.
No, that was like
was
the crowd,
so
like people
cool.
were stamping, like
that's
on
insane.
The ground. It was like a real stampede.
Yeah, it actually Ooh, was. Hey. That's the thing. That's why I thought it was so like yeah. apt. Like that's why I thought it had to be like edited in.
Yeah, no, it was real.
It was so cool.
So cool.
So this is the reason for all this. We've kind of jumped past it. The reason for all this is because The Undertaker's entrance is literally the greatest thing to ever happen to wrestling.
100%. 100%.
Campbell is
so
freaking out.
Fucking, it's insane that like he's been doing this entrance since the mid-90s, and it still gives me goosebumps every time.
I can't explain it, like being live in an arena when that gong hits and like the lights go out. There's something about it that still, I'm sure, like, and that's why I was kind of hoping
your
it would
tummy
come out.
Turns, I'm sure.
Yeah, like, and even, you get arm goosebumps, you know? Yeah.
Even in this tape where, like, the gong hits and the music starts and they miss the cue to kill the lights.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ah, these fucking idiots. And then as soon as they killed the lights, I was like, oh, like, it still worked me, you know?
Yeah, and, like, congrats on Vader to the reaction, because Vader looked shook.
Yeah.
Shook. When the like you could see Vader like running around wide-eyed.
And Paul Bearer is like hiding behind the ring, like crouching under the apron.
Again, chef's kiss, that acting, this match. Woo!
It's like, and again, it contributes to that really, really big fight feel that like you know that at any other show this would have been the main event. You know? Like
absolutely.
This like
yeah.
I think it kinda should have been.
Ooh. No, you take that back. Nobody's pop was as big as the Hearts, but we'll get to it.
So, Taker kind of just kicks ass this whole match, and Vader gets, like, barely any offense in.
And, like, so, but back to the Mick Foley thing, where it was, like, it was nice to see Mick Foley move around. Mm-hmm. It was really nice to watch The Undertaker move.
Man,
Undertaker looks so good.
He's so
good.
Spry.
Yeah.
He comes out in, like, old knight at ease gear. And then he takes it off and he's wearing like these high-waisted black leggings with like sort of armory strappy details on them and like a slightly poofy shirt tucked in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he looks so good. Such a good look.
Such a good look. And, yeah. You know, Paul Bearer running around ringside calling him a murderer.
Which, such a good look.
Oh, such a good look. It's like again, like all these like storylines and like, you know, just like gimmicks and like the outfits and everything of the 90s was such like a special moment for me because mm-hmm. it's like that's what I that's like something I think that can never be recaptured with wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, that moment in time where like the fans didn't know enough, we're all still kind of like getting wise to it, but they still had a little freedom to you know, do these costumes, do
it
these
was,
you know,
it was
like,
kind of this perfect mix where like you look at wrestling and you look at it as I think kind of a spectrum of like real life fighting and very cartoony over the top.
Yeah.
And that I think like the 80s was like very, very cartoony. You have your like Hulk Hogan's, your like every gimmick was just like a guy that had a job.
Yeah.
You know?
And even the 90s, like right before this right happened, before this, like yeah. 95, I would say, was the cutoff.
And you have now where like everybody's name is just like a guy's name, you know, like yep. It's like Dean Ambrose is fighting Seth Rollins, and it's like, what the fucking give me, like if I wanted that, I would just watch like UFC.
Sure.
And I think that like this point in time is the perfect conflation of these like really big over the top characters, these personalities turned up to 11, these like outlandish wild gimmicks, but with very real, very grounded, like humanity to yeah. them, and like stories, and like the style of wrestling is a little bit more hard hitting and a little bit more violent. And it's like, it's very much a thing where it's like, for all the faults of the Attitude Era, I can understand going back and watching it, like why people hold it in such high esteem.
Everything was firing on all cylinders. And if I'm watching wrestling, I'm allowing myself to believe I'm watching a universe where, you know, the Undertaker could be dead, you know, and like, you know, the Hart Foundation is like, you know, Canada heroes without any real gimmick other than that. Mm-hmm. But then like, you know, you can throw in like all of these other like highly gimmicked wrestlers like Kane, who survived a fire, and like, mm-hmm. you know, like Triple H, who's like a blue blood, you know, coming from all of these things. I'm willing to accept, because like, you know, it's plausible in this, like this landscape you've created. And like, again, I think now, like Campbell said, you know, we're just saying it's like this guy fighting this guy, and there's no real.
And it's when they do try character. To inject that sort of like otherworldly, like the demon Finn Balor or whatever, they don't, like, it's a thing where it's like it's not really committed to anymore.
Yep.
And I mean, of course, like we're talking very specifically about mainstream WWE wrestling. Like obviously yeah. you have your Lucha Undergrounds, you have your, like, if you want like weird over the top, like goofy characters, you can go to Chikara, you know. Yep. If you want more realistic, like hard hitting, like the Bloodsport event that happened WrestleMania weekend was incredible, you know.
Yeah.
But like in terms of like the reason I think that like mainstream WWE doesn't click for people right now the way that it did then is just because then was such a specific like so many things coming together, it was such a specific point in time.
Yeah, like we all agree that we're watching a ridiculous product. Mm-hmm. Just make it a little ridiculous and fun sometimes.
So. I feel like Velveteen Dream is kind of a return to that.
I love it. I mean, it's such a good throwback.
We have totally talked yeah. about Velveteen Dream being like a that pulling all of those throwback gimmicks, but also those throwback moves, and filtering it through a modern lens in such a perfect way. Like, I think Velveteen's a great example of yep. that. And of course, there are exceptions to the rule.
I would say,
yeah,
because
like,
I was thinking as you were talking, like, I was thinking about Ember Moon, and I would say that that's somebody who's trying really hard to revive that, but it isn't working.
Mm-hmm. You know
what
worked for her?
Whereas Velveteen is.
If they made her a wolf woman.
Yeah.
Ah, now Josh Pryor's on board.
I still don't think that would work on the main roster, just based on what else they have.
Yeah,
going.
Like, if they haven't. Like, after how many years of Bray Wyatt, like,
they imagine her challenging. They don't give Magic the space, and they don't give that kind of personality the
and
space.
Can you imagine, like, if, like, every time Raw was, like, on a full moon?
Whoa!
Oh, come on! Give me the book!
Oh, my God! Give Josh the book!
That'd be, like, her, like, demon Balor mode.
Holy shit, dictated by the fucking moon.
Hell yeah.
So, Undertaker looks amazing in this That's match. Off. We've kind of talked about how Vader isn't... Like, he's being a little handicapped by the booking here. It's, like... I really, really like this match just for, the feel and, like, seeing Undertaker in his prime. Like, seeing these moves pulled off the way that they're supposed to be pulled off.
There's
like,
some sick wrestling moves.
When he hits the old school, it does not look like Vader is holding him up. It actually looks like he has a wrist lock on Vader.
Yep.
When he gets Vader up for that tombstone the first time, holy shit.
Yeah. Like, and he's like, he's grabbing, like, so he's not just going through the motions like mm-hmm. a regular Undertaker match. Like, we know if we see an Undertaker match, it's like, ugh, I gotta hit this old school.
Yeah.
And you can see him like mentally struggle to kind of get there, and then physically actually struggle to hit it.
I was actually so mad that they didn't call the old school, because I wanted to know what they called it. Before
old school.
It was the old school.
Just school.
You know, did they just call it school? But they were just like, oh, wow, what a maneuver. Like,
vintage Undertaker.
And Undertaker, like, full-on kicks Vader in the face out over the top rope at one point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, he's hitting those leg drops.
He's fucking spry. Mm-hmm. Sprightly chap.
Also, let's talk about the fact that Vader full on kicked Undertaker in the dick.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In front of the ref. And, like, there's no, like, distraction or, like, funny business.
The ref was just like, cool.
Just looking at him.
And here's the thing. In the finish, Taker got one back on him, right?
He did.
And so I said this before that, like, everything that I know about Vader, I learned from Boy Meets World.
Go on.
And Corey Matthews suggests to Ethan Suplee's character, who in the kayfabe of Boy Meets World is Vader's son.
This is incredible. I've never seen the show, but...
He says that the problem with Vader is that he spends too long setting up the Vader bomb. But he did not tell Vader to hurry up with the Vader bomb for this match. And he takes way too long setting up the Vader bomb, and the Undertaker hits him in the dick.
Yeah.
Throws down a dope second rope choke slam.
That was
so sick.
And then gets the 1-2-3 off of a tombstone pile driver.
Yeah.
So if I have one thing to say for this match is maybe he should have taken Corey Matthews' advice.
You know what? I think that's good advice for everybody. Again, not seeing the show, I have 0 point of reference on that.
Same.
I don't know. Someone, if you're listening out there, validate me. Like, hit us up on Instagram.
Yeah. Smash that motherfucking like button. Validate Campbell.
Hashtag Vader meets world.
Hashtag validate Campbell. Yeah, this is, I gave this 3 1/5 bald head.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Now, Lauren's just looking at me every time. I'm going to just.
Lauren is the pallbearer of this podcast right now. Don't look at me!
You murdered the bald head ratings.
1/5, he says. Can't commit to a half.
Okay, well, I don't sound like that. Okay, I'll stick to quarters and halves now, okay?
So before we get to our main event, I think this is the perfect time to drop in a little Stone Cold Shots sign watch.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Attitude Era. We gotta.
Oh, but sure.
We gotta.
I'll let you run through your list, because I only have one.
I have one.
Yeah.
Okay. So I had a few.
I'm sure Campbell has like 18.
Yeah, well, I had a couple written down. I'll give you the cream of the crop. I really liked one guy who was holding up a sign that had an arrow pointing towards himself. Perfect. Very confident individual, and it said Alberta Beef.
Nice. That's great.
I thought that was pretty great. Yeah, there was a Hart 2517, which I had to Google, and I think is a reference to the Bible verse that Tarantino rewrote for the Ezekiel 23:15 Pulp Fiction bit.
That's like a deep cut for a sign.
Very deep cut. There were two of them. There were two Hart 2517s. The Bible verse is something about I will extract vengeance.
Yeah, so like it was, but you know what? That makes sense timeline.
Right?
Wise.
Like Pulp Fiction would have been really big.
Yeah, like it just came out. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. That was about it. There was a guy walking around with a sign that said, "This is work rate." And on the back it said, "What's kayfabe?" And that was like a pure 97 smark.
Can I tell you, that sign would have been so edgy in 97. It's like, that guy gets it. that guy reads the forums. He knows what dirt sheets are all about.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And then my last thing was just that I was keeping a tally of every time I saw Brett spelled with 2 T's.
Yep.
And I got 3.
Yeah, that sounds about right, because I definitely saw it twice.
Yeah.
That I can remember, but if you saw one more,
yeah,
great.
So, yeah, what did you guys have for the sign watch?
Lauren, do you want to do yours?
Sure. Mine was that there was, like, a really great bedazzled Stone Cold sign. Like, the skull was all, like, jeweled.
Bejeweled.
And I thought that was really great. Like, it's such a perfect example of, like, a shitty wrestling fan just, like, shelving his homophobia to make a really dope sign.
Just expressing himself in the most beautiful way possible.
Exactly. The way it should be done.
Can you imagine? Especially, like, being Calgary with all these cowboys.
Cowboy hats. Like,
man,
it's the
fuck
most
these guys.
Redneck shit, and it's such a, like, camp sign.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
The only one I have written down was there's one that said, American fans make me sick.
Whoa.
Which I thought was perfect.
Just to the point.
Yeah. No, no bones about it. It's like, wow, it's a hot take.
It is. You should come on our show.
Call out to that fan. American fans make me sick. If you want to be a special guest on the Stone Cold Shots podcast, just email us at stonecoldshotspodcast@gmail.com.
All right. So we're getting into our main event.
Yeah, they show this like vignette going into the match, and
they have this video package with this really righteous guitar solo happening the whole time.
Yeah, and they show like, so there's three guys in the bike.
So hey, can I give you my interpretation of this first, and then you can tell me what actually happened?
Yeah, no, go for it.
So a bunch of Hell's Angels are fighting the Nation of Domination, which is I feel like is a really bad look. A lot of people are really upset about the Forgotten Sons right now using biker imagery and it not being very PC, which I feel like is whatever in regards to the Forgotten Sons, but if you're going to set them up specifically against like a Black Power stable, that's a really rough look.
Yeah. And then the Los Barriquas.
I had it written down as Boys to Men comes out and saves them.
That's Los Barriquas. Barriquas.
And then we just smash cut to another promo package of Austin and Hart at WrestleMania 13. None of this made any sense.
And like, none of these guys were in the match.
Yeah!
Like Crush, Skull, and 8-Ball weren't even in the match. And also, it came out later that Skull and 8-Ball had a few racist tattoos. We're actually maybe confirmed to be legit racist pieces of shit.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
And so, like, first of all, bad choice of clips. Second of all, it didn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like for the match. But then, like, you get into the Austin Brett stuff, which completely makes sense.
Yeah. I was just disengaged for the first bit because I was just like, I don't know who these people are and I don't know what's happening. We're still waiting. Is this when they, like, switch over to the promo, like, the backstage segment? Like interview with like all of the people who are in that match.
So you have Stone Cold, who doesn't say anything for this entire promo and is probably the only guy that you actually give a shit about.
Yeah.
You have Ken Shamrock, the Legion of Doom.
Yeah.
Who I thought, like, I've never seen the Legion of Doom in my fucking life, and in this backstage segment, I just thought they were Aboriginal, like, indigenous face paint dudes, because all they were doing was making sounds, and they had like very indigenous-esque right? Like, does that not sound like what the WWE interprets as like a native man?
No, we gotta watch Tatanka for that.
Yeah.
Tatanka was, again, in the 90s.
Right. It's probably so much worse than what I'm thinking.
But anyway, Legion Doom, I forgot how big those guys were.
Huge.
Those guys were jacked.
Yeah.
They were pretty fucking sick. I've never seen them before. They were fucking dope.
I was like, I couldn't stop looking at their physiques.
And also Goldust was there.
Oh, yes, Goldust.
Oh, he was amazing.
But this was like post-heel Goldust, where they didn't really know. Like, so Goldust, like when he first debuted, was like this really like, he used to call it like androgynous, you know, like he'd be like very like, oh, is he gay? Is he... Yeah, and that's like perfect 90s, whatever.
Yeah. Total gay panic.
Like. Yeah, gay panic. Like, especially go back and watch the Razor Ramon stuff if you're not familiar. But yeah, so like, I guess he had just turned heel or just turned face, and they didn't really know what to do with him. Mm-hmm. So he just talking like Dustin Rhodes.
Well, it's kind of, it feels like with this like gaggle of men, they didn't know what to do with any of them.
They were real motley crew.
Like, they were just like, oh, we got to find somebody to fight the Hart Foundation, and Stone Cold's really hot. And it's like the whole like Stone Cold not saying anything in this backstage segment was like, it felt like he was really pissed that he was here with this bunch of face painted schmucks.
Yeah.
Totally. You know, like really, you couldn't find fucking anything better for him to do.
But that was like kind of the appeal of Stone Cold, right?
Yeah,
he just did his own thing. He didn't give a fuck about anybody else. It's like, why am I in this tag team match?
Yeah,
I just want to beat some Hart's ass.
Totally. Yeah. So we cut from that. Stone Cold sort of storms off. We have the Canadian national anthem sung by Farmer's Daughter.
Farmer's Daughter.
Yeah. Just three ladies singing a cappella harmony.
Yep. Weird harmonies for the anthem.
Yeah. Really weird harmonies. Yeah. Really weird, like, rain slickers.
But, yeah, exactly. It's like fake PVC kind of, like, bodysuits.
I had to look them up. I had to look them up. They did apparently have one big hit that I am going to use for the intro to this episode.
Oh, you're an asshole.
How exciting.
We're shown Alberta Progressive Conservative Premier Ralph Klein.
Boo.
Is he, I don't know enough about 90s politics, but Progressive Conservative, he was probably a bad dude. Yeah. You know, like, we got, like, fucking Ralph Klein and Donald Trump. They never show, like, you know, like, Jack Layton was never in the WWF.
No.
And then we have Vietnam flashback Stu Hart sitting in the crowd.
Hey, Brett. Like, go get him, my son.
He's sitting there with the fucking thousand-yard stare to end all thousand-yard stares.
Stu is, like, I don't know if you guys know much about Stu Hart, but, like, so the dungeon in Calgary is just Stu's basement, essentially. And you get all these young boys down there, and you just, like, put them in really painful submission moves. It's like, yeah, get him in there, get, grab his arm, and then I'm gonna give him a twist, and then let me know if it hurts. Like, that's all he would do. And then, like, you know, but, like, back in the day, Stu Hart was, you know, like, a very successful promoter, you know, had a little bit of a wrestling run, but yeah, Stu's looking kind of his age in this one.
Mm.
Yeah.
Then we get the entrances. So Stone Cold and company enter first.
Stone Cold looked like he was loving that heat.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, he had this, like, shit-eating grin on his face.
His theme, though, is like, it's like when you hear, like, the demo of a band that you really like. Like, it's like the difference between hearing, like, Hear Nothing, Say Nothing by Discharge and then hearing, like, the Discharge demo. Is the difference between Stone Cold's theme and Stone Cold's theme.
It's funny that I was going to say the same
thing. We're like hearing original Metallica versus, like,
Saint Anger?
Yeah.
Yeah, you lost me on that reference.
It's, honestly, the Discharge analogy was better. But
well, no shit, Campbell. Jeez, sorry. I'm trying to make it a bit more approachable.
And honestly, Lauren, I didn't understand the reference, so...
So, but Stone Cold comes out.
I guess, edit it out then.
Stone Cold comes out last, right? So, before that, we have... I love that Goldust's entrance was in a different aspect ratio.
Yep.
Than everybody else was really
what
cool.
What was that?
His like, entrance is back in the, like, when he first debuted.
Mm-hmm.
They do, like, the cinematic view.
Yeah.
And then, like, it used to, like, the frame rate would change, and, like, it would have this, like, gold filter on it. His entrance used to be so good. And, like, the original Goldust character was fucking fire. Like, it was so good. Anyway.
Ken Shamrock enters whatever.
Yeah, this is new Ken. And, like, kudos to Ken Shamrock, because his time in the WWF, he went from, like, a really unpolished kind of UFC guy coming in to, like, an actual, like, legit wrestler by the time he left.
And then Legion of Doom. I love the, like, what are like, I could do that all day.
It was,
you know?
Dope.
Like, I liked it too.
I do think it's absolutely ridiculous that they're called Road Warrior Animal and Road Warrior Hawk.
Yeah.
And the tag name, the team name isn't the Animals or the Road Warriors.
Well, the Road Warriors was their first.
I know,
game,
yeah.
Right?
Like, but it's like they're going by the Legion of Doom. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's Vince McMahon, baby.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's the Viking experience all over again.
The Road Warrior experience.
And then the Hart Foundation come out.
One at a time, and man alive, you might as well have the fucking Beatles come out.
Yeah.
Because that shit was lit.
Yeah.
So who do they... They start with Brian Pillman.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was, like, really cool, and obviously, like, this is kind of, like, this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of around the start of the Monday Night Wars, like, era.
Yeah, like, it was definitely going.
So they're not going to acknowledge that Brian Pillman and Stone Cold used to be in a tag team together?
Yeah, because they're trying to, like, distance those two, and, like,
totally.
You know, so maybe they'll allude to, like, history that they have.
But I do think it's cool that, like, that's a thing.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
And then we have
Jim
Neidhart, a.k.a. Anvil, a.k.a. Yep. Daddy.
Yep.
Daddy!
Daddy.
For any of our Totes Deves viewers out there. British Bulldog.
He's just a fit man.
No, he's bizarre. He's, but, like, and, like, the interesting part is, like, so the first three that came out, you know, they're not Harts by birth, but, I mean, like, they all have very close ties to the Hart family, right?
Yeah.
You know, Davey and Anvil both marrying into the family.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, Brian Pillman, like, a lot of his history is through, like, the Hard Dungeon and stuff like
totally.
That.
Totally, yeah. And, like, I think that's the thing is that, like, you look at this match and it's so clearly, like, a five-man stable that, like you said, they're not, like, Hart family by blood, but, like, they feel like a collection of people that belongs together.
Yeah,
they
and they're all adopted sons of Canada, right? Yeah. And so no matter what they did, no matter where they went, they're always going to be associated with the Hart family, as far as the fans were concerned.
It very much felt like when you had, like, the Shield going up against, like, they were like, Baron Corbin, Bobby Lashley, and Elias? Like, like, it's just like, all right, you have a team of real guys against, like, just fucking whoever didn't have a spot on the card.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then we got Owen Hart coming out with his slammies.
Guys, I want to tell you, like, if Owen Hart were alive today, he would have been killing it right now on, like, Raw, SmackDown, just doing his thing. That guy was legit hilarious. Like, he won Slammy Awards, but, like, before, like, that was an actually thing. And, like, and, like, he came out, like, holding them and, like, rubbed them in everybody's faces. And, like, it's like the Slammies were, like, for, like, Tag Team of the Year or something like that. And his partner wouldn't carry the award. He would carry both of the awards. He was actually, like, a piece of shit, but he was so good at it. And, yeah, like, this match, you know, like, just seeing Owen in the ring and kind of, like, the way he, like, did his business made me miss Owen Hart a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then Bret Hart comes out, and holy shit.
John Lennon.
The room explodes.
The place comes unglued, and it's such a cool entrance. Like, it's just, like, this, like...
The guitar?
Sick guitar riff. Like, it's so, like, 80s, like, filtered through 90s, like, cock rock.
But that's, like, the thing that, like, you know, like, because there's still some of it now, but, like, that one tone to let you know who the wrestler, like, the Stone Cold glass shattering, Bret Hart's, like, like, all of that, like, was so...
You know, I am in the top 1%.
Ugh. But it doesn't have that, like, visceral, you know, like, the visceral hit.
Holy sorry, shit. What about one and only?
Ding, 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 ding.
One, two, is this one?
That was cool. Okay. Yeah, so I think there's, like, but, like, just, like, when that hit, like, everybody, like, instantly, like, got to their feet and were like,
yeah. It rules, and, like, he comes to the ring with this entourage. He gives the sunglasses to his mom.
His mommy.
So good.
Everybody's losing it. It's like, it's an entrance. It's like a big entourage. Like, you know, like, these guys are the tits. Yeah. Like, you know?
You guys legit the Beatles of Canada.
Yeah, totally.
Like, not even joking.
And they get up there, and I love that they start the match off with, like, they just, like, no pussyfooting around. Yeah. Like, it's just, like, Bret Hart versus Stone Cold. This, like, they start the match off with this WrestleMania rematch. It starts so hot.
And, like, it's interesting because, you know, the Harts are heels, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so they're telling that story in the States. But in Canada, they're telling the story. It's like, well, you know, it's like they're going to do some heelish stuff. But they're, like, brave Canadians, like, you know, fighting on their ground. And it was interesting to watch that kind of play out. Because Austin was a little bit more heelish, but, like, everybody else on the team was kind of struggling to find where they were, because they're usually good guys, but now they have to kind of, like, you know, act like bad guys, you know?
So you had this story of this match.
Campbell just said quotes.
Yeah. This is, I mean, like, let's not beat around the bush here. Like, this match was a fucking mess. There were way too many people involved that had nothing to do with the story of Stone Cold versus Bret Hart. So the story of this match was, like, Stone Cold doing some heel shit, like, messing around with Owen's knee, throwing some chair shots in. But then, like, the Hart Foundation would keep kind of doing this thing where they would single out, like, one person from the other team and pull them into the corner where they would all do, like, this big beatdown in the corner. So everybody was doing kind of heel stuff here and there. Mm-hmm. They send Owen to the back with an injury. So there's a numbers advantage that never ever comes into play.
Mm-hmm. And then, but then they send Austin
to the back in sort of a retribution knee injury.
Yeah.
And then Austin comes back, and then Owen Hart comes back. And that's basically the narrative of the match, right? Overviewing. But, like, we'll get into, like, were there some, like, standout spots for you guys? Was there anybody, like... Lauren, this is a thing where it's like, it's your first time seeing like a lot of these guys wrestle. Of this gang of like 10 dudes, rate them.
No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that.
It's a lot of pressure.
Brian Pillman was a huge standout for me just because he was working such classic heel shtick stuff. Like mm-hmm. he was like slamming, like the one of the standout moments for me was like when he... I can't even remember who he was facing at that moment, but he was like tapping out for somebody and being like, ah, he's tapping out.
Yeah.
Like,
and it was Ken Shamrock, who's supposed to be like a submission specialist.
Right.
So it like even it throws salt in that wound even like a little bit more. I also wrote that spot down. I thought that was great.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought that Brian had like so much old school intensity about him, and he had a really great look, and he was fully committed the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I also was surprised because when the British Bulldog came out, I thought he would look really boring and dumb, but he was really good in the ring.
Yeah.
Just like full intensity wise.
Yeah.
And obviously Stone Cold was amazing. I thought Brett was like pretty good, but like, I don't know. I think I have like weird feelings about Brett.
Brett's really good at like in the match, like making everything look good.
He makes it all look good. He just always seems cold to me, and I don't... Yeah, I can't like, put my finger on it.
And he works a little different as a heel than he does as a face. So mm-hmm. it's like he's so smart to it all. Like it's almost by design, right? Like, and you can see, and it's only very slight changes. Like when he turned face to heel, it was like, interesting because it's like his style got like you said, a little bit more cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a little bit more like calculated and like, you know, like vicious, like where he focuses on a body part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the figure four in like the corner. So it's like he's got that like malicious intent.
Right.
But like it's calculated.
Yeah.
I think I'm talking to a true fan here. So.
And that's just from what I've seen.
Well, I think there's like very much something to be said about like of all 10 guys in this match that like the technicality and just like the in-ring proficiency of the Hart brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Like Owen and Brett are in terms of their like work rate, you know, to use a very like smarky...
You might as well have been holding that sign up there.
Yeah, this is work rate. Like, they're so clearly just a cut above everyone else. Like, even Stone Cold, you know?
Yeah.
Is a thing where it's like, these two guys are just, like, ripping through the moves, you know?
Stone Cold, like, again, like, I think it goes probably Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Steve Austin, in probably that order as far as, like, the best workers in the ring that night. And it showed. I mean, like, those guys were killing it, but everybody else in the match...
I would maybe even throw Owen above Brett. Like, I was... Yeah. This is one of the first Owen Hart matches that I can, like, remember really watching.
It's definitely my first.
And he fucking blew me away. Goddamn.
I ain't mad at that.
Yeah.
I'll take that. Sure.
Like...
I think that's interchangeable. If you watch their WrestleMania 10 match...
This was a thing where, like, I recently listened to another podcast about their WrestleMania 10 match, and watching this makes me really want to go back and have us watch WrestleMania 10.
I think that's so down for
coming down the pipes sometime soon.
Yeah, check your calendar. Check the Facebook page. And remember to smash that motherfucking like button.
But yeah, Owen, like, he hits an enziguri in that match that is, like, maybe the best enziguri I've ever seen.
Owen Hart's enziguris were, like, on point.
I love how quickly that there's a moment where, like, Brett, like, goes for the sharpshooter, and he doesn't fuck around. He just, like, throws in that sharpshooter, like, quick. And it's that thing where it's like, oh, like, these guys aren't fucking around. Like, it adds to the story, and it looks great. Like,
and especially watching, like, other people try to do the sharpshooter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we saw Steve Austin do a sharpshooter in this match, and it looked so fucking sloppy. I was please don't do this.
So my two big takeaways from this match was, one small one that I thought was really funny was, at one point Vince McMahon says, "This is patriotism gone awry." Or, sorry. "This is patriotism gone awry."
Gross.
Which is, like, of all of the fucking people to talk about patriotism gone awry, Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Jesus Christ. I think the big thing about this match that, like, I said before, there's, like, too many people, there's too many moving parts, there's a lot going on, And the way that that reflects is, like, anytime that anybody goes for a pin or anytime anybody goes for a submission, someone, like, so nonchalantly just, like, walks in the ring, breaks up the pin, like, and then kind of just, like, schleps back to their corner.
But, like, they'll, like, nonchalantly come up and, like, aggressively step on their head and then nonchalantly walk back. Yeah.
And it's just, like, I wish that I had been keeping a tally, because I would... Sure. Someone maybe can go back and watch this match and let us know and, like,
in the comments.
Me.
In the comments.
In the comments. But, like, I would bet that there are at least 20 pin or submission breakups in this match.
And that's not a ridiculous number.
Which
that
is,
sounds,
like,
that sounds about right.
Usually there should be, like, 2, right? Like...
I'd say 2 or 3.
Yeah.
You mean by this day and age's standards?
Well, I mean, like, in terms of, like... maintaining my suspension of disbelief, keeping me excited about a pin happening or a submission happening, is like, if I know that every time that happens someone's just gonna walk in and, like, push them off or, like, step on a guy's head, it's different from, like, if it's like I know that they only get, like, 1 or 2, you know. It's basically the same thing as, like, kicking out of a finisher. Mm-hmm. You know, that, like, you can only do it a couple of times before I just don't give a shit about any pin anymore.
True. Yeah, it was a good match. I mean, like, there's, like, a spot with Brian Pillman's butt.
Yep.
That I think everybody was pretty excited about.
Brian Warren. Pillman drops Trow and then does, like, one of the shittiest sells of the stunner of all time.
Yeah. That was very old
school.
He
was disoriented because his butt was just out in the air.
I love that move. It's like you're trying to move forward when somebody's pulling down your pants and your arms are flailing. Like, that's going to do anything to get your pants back up. Austin hit, like, weird looking stunners this match too.
Yeah.
I noticed that, like, a couple of the stunners were kind of like he would kick and then stop and, like, almost walk up to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, grab them by the head, and, like, it wasn't like the fluid motion stunner that we're used to.
Not quite refined.
Not quite refined yet. He's still coming into it.
Yeah.
The finish of this match is fucking wild, right?
What match? Yeah, this is a wild finish. Everybody's running around. Melee, chaos, calamity. People are coming back in. People are leaving.
Yeah, Stone Cold comes back.
Please tell me about it, because my notes are confused.
Lauren kind of fell asleep a little bit. But basically what happens is Stone Cold tries to fight the entire Hart family, including Charlton Heston Vietnam flashback Stu Hart.
Yeah, it's like, and all these guys that are dressed so 90s, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And you could tell the Harts are, like, trying to overact a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Stone Cold's going after them, and he's, like, being such a great shit heel.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, the Harts are reaching at him. Like, he almost goes at Stu, the poor old Stu.
Yeah. And he gets a beer thrown in his face.
Exactly.
But, yeah, basically Stone Cold tries to pick a fight with the entire Hart clan.
Mm-hmm.
And then gets thrown back in the ring, and it's like a roll-up pin or some shit. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh, so there was a pin, because when I like came to, there was just a lot of security in there, and I was really confused.
Yeah, so Stone Cold gets pinned somehow or another. It was kind of a weak finish, to be honest.
I think it was
so
Owen.
I believe it was Owen. Yeah,
I think it was Owen that gets a pin.
And then Stone Cold gets mobbed by security and handcuffed, and he's dragged out, flipping everybody off behind his back.
So that was cool.
That happens after. So before this, so the Harts get the pin.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're all celebrating the ring. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They get everybody up. The grandma. They got Grandma Hart.
She's
still wearing her sunglasses.
And then, like, all the other teams leaving. And then Stone Cold comes back by himself with a steel chair and nails Anvil and starts going after the entire Hart family by himself in, like, one of the greatest, like, blazes of glory I've ever seen. It was so, like, perfect Stone Cold. It's like, yeah, that's why I love this guy.
Yeah.
This guy is awesome. And he's like, I don't give a fuck. And then, like, all of the Harts just jump on him. They're all dogpiling him. And then security gets him in the handcuffs.
I am amazed.
Wow.
I cannot fucking believe that it was just, like, normal security guards and not Mounties.
Oh my god, you're right.
Wearing, like, Calgary Flames jerseys.
I can't believe it wasn't fucking what's his name from Slings and Arrows?
Paul Gross.
I can't believe it wasn't Paul Gross that from Due South wearing a Calgary Flames jersey. Yeah.
That'd been dope.
And it was just security. It's like, why are they handcuffing them?
Like, if anything, they should be zip ties.
Yeah.
I gave it 3.25.
All right.
I would have gave this a higher rating because of the crowd. But at the same time, the match was a little bit of a clusterfuck.
There were so many dudes.
And it can't be the match of the night.
No.
And I'm not giving 7/8 ratings anymore. So
sorry.
3.25. It stands.
Yeah. So what we like to do here on the show is we kind of wrap up every pape with a high spot and a botched spot.
And
so,
a song.
And a song?
Well, look at me.
It's going to be the Farmer's Daughter, O Canada. Everybody learned their harmonized parts.
Oh. There are three of us.
So yeah, basically something that we really liked about the pape, something that we didn't like too much, just some closing thoughts, maybe shedding a little light on something we didn't get to talk about enough before. Lauren, you want to go first?
Okay, I will start with my botch spot, which I regret that I didn't write down word for word, but there is a part at the beginning, very beginning, where it really just crystallizes that it is Jerry the King Lawler on the announce team, where he just throws some mad shade at like Canadian women being really ugly. Ugh. And I wish I had written it down, the exact quote, because it was very cringeworthy.
Yeah. Well, it's like Jerry the King Lawler talking about how like ugly Canadian women are. I think it was in reference to Mankind's Mask.
Yeah.
And then him talking about China and him talking. And it's just like, man, like, fuck Jerry the King Lawler.
That was peak Jerry the King Lawler in the 90s. Like,
oh, yeah.
And it's like, I'm surprised he didn't go after the Hart family more, because like, he feuded with Brett for a long time.
Mm.
And he was throwing some real barbs. Real barbs. And again, like, Jerry Lawler in the 90s was just kind of like all over the place. Some of it was good. Some of it was like the garbage that we heard tonight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I agree.
What was your high spot?
Well, I'm going to allow myself a mid spot. Because
a mid spot.
Ooh.
Holy shit. This is brand new.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure whether I consider this, it's technically a botch, but I consider it a high point to me, was when
when Brian Pillman's ass came out?
Yeah, when Brian Pillman's butt got aired out in the ring for all to see. That was a real great spot for me.
Terrible botch. Terrible.
I feel like he's the perfect mix between like Dolph Ziggler and Dean Ambrose.
Which, oh, it's like a hot combo.
Those are your guys.
Yeah, it's good. It works for me real good.
The original Lunatic Fringe.
Yeah, was not a botch for me to see his butt. Yeah.
Okay, and what was your high spot?
I'm going to say the Taka Sasuke match. It was just something that I didn't expect to see in this pape, and I was blown away by it. It was very engaging, and I loved it. And like you said, like, it could have been just cherry picked out of this pape and put into a current like NXT match.
Definitely.
NXT pay per view, and it would have been perfect. Like, it was awesome, yeah. Or New Japan or something. Like, it was so hard hitting, and it was great, and took me by surprise.
Yeah, it really, that match really made me want to go back and watch a lot of like late 90s, early 2000s Japanese stuff.
Yeah, and like, you know, the promotions were a little bit more like spread out, you know, like, and again, like, I haven't seen much of like, you know, the old Inoki stuff besides like the famous YouTube clips.
Yeah, or like the what's his name?
Brian?
Kenta Kobashi.
Yep.
Like, yeah,
but like old Muda and stuff, like just all of that like great footage out there that I'm sure like they were having like, you know, matches way before their time.
Yeah,
and I think this was just a great showcase of that. It's like, this is what's going on other places.
Yeah, it's like there's no way this is like the first fucking time this happened,
right?
Anywhere.
And yeah. I mean, not to get too like candid here, but to pull back the curtain, like, a lot of us doing this podcast is like, we're trying to kind of branch out and watch some stuff that like Lauren and I haven't seen before. We're trying to show Josh some like cool lucha stuff that he hasn't seen before. That's why we're doing the fan polls. And like, if you guys, like, outside of our polls, if you guys have suggestions for cool papes for us to watch, or even cool matches for us to watch, please, like, let us know. Hit us up. Like, the email is stonecoldshotspod@gmail.com.
That Facebook, like, that Instagram. Yeah.
We want to know. Smash that motherfucking like button.
But for real, like, we want to know about, like, cool shit that we're missing out
on. Absolutely. Like, yeah. It's like there's stuff outside of our scope that we're just not going to know about besides Google searches, right?
Exactly. Totally. So the collective you know a lot more than just us three. Yeah. So.
The Stone Cold Shots universe is really the GM.
The believers.
Yeah. The believers backlash.
Josh, what were your high spot and your botch spot?
I'd say toss up for me between that weak Motorhead cover of Ode to Joy and, and the referee from the Hunter's Helmsley Mankind match. Missing all of those really, really fucking blatant cheating spots from China. I couldn't get over that. There was three.
Yeah.
There was three, and, like, the referee was hardly distracted. And then, you know, Mankind would just fall over and maybe like, oh, what? Ugh. So between those two, I would say, for me, I couldn't get over that all match. I was fuming.
Yeah.
I was pacing around my living room.
I feel like that's always what happens with refs. I don't know why you were so upset.
I think I'm kind of with Josh here. I think it was a little more egregious.
I did not.
Like, they didn't even try for a distraction. You know.
China was often distracting. I don't know if the way these that you're talking about.
Like, her arm, like, Triple H's arm would kind of be, like, shifted up and to the right. And then China would, like, just, like, low blow Mick Foley or something, right? And then, like, he'd fall over, like, writhing in pain, and the ref would be like, what?
But what? That is current. Like, if the ref doesn't see the move, they can't call against. Listen, that's current shit that happens right now.
I'm gonna shout out to you, the Stone Cold Podcast.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah, Stone Cold Shots vote. Podcast. You vote. You let us know if that was egregious or not.
And what was your high spot?
High spot for me was the Hart family entrance.
Mm.
So, like, just watching them come out one at a time, and then, like, you know, it's sad to think about, like, you know, all of them except Brett are dead now.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, I was just thinking about, like, each one of them. Like, Brian Pillman is like...
Is he dead?
Brian Pillman died, like, during that run. So he died when the Hart Foundation was still going.
Yeah. Owen Hart died, like, probably a year or two out from
I think, like, 1999.
I'm trying to think.
That's
I was
the
in...
one that I know about. But...
Yeah, and British Bulldog died in the 2000s. Anvil died recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's like watching them all come out, like, I remembered things about them individually. Like, Pillman, like, his ECW stuff was, you know, again, way ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
He was having matches in WCW. Just like this great, like, Tiger Mask fast style, like, really, like, advanced shit. Brian Pillman was like, that's a guy for me. If I can take, like, five wrestlers from the past and, like, plop them in right now.
Yeah.
Brian Pillman 100% would be
Brian Pillman's a dude that I've seen like 2.5 Brian Pillman matches, and, like, I totally agree that, like, he would, like, I think that the one caveat that I have about Brian Pillman, like, putting him into, like, right now is that, like, you would throw him in right now and he would be in the, like, Dolph Ziggler, Dean Ambrose spot.
Yeah,
right?
Imagine him and Dean Ambrose doing something together.
It would
right
be amazing.
Now.
And so that's the thing is, like, I think, like, Pillman would be a great fit for, like, the indies. I think Brian Pillman would be, like, you pull, like, 90s Brian Pillman and put him in Bullet Club. Like, I'm fucking on board. 100%. You know?
Like, that guy's, like, a leader through and through.
Yeah.
But then that, and, like, you know, Bulldog was great. Anvil, you know, iconic with Brett. And Owen. Like, Owen Hart, you know, for me, for my dollar, like, that guy made me laugh so much during his run. And, you know, even, like, the Blue Blazer stuff, like, he was stuck with at the end of his life, right? It was just, like, it was so over the top and, like, mocking Hulk Hogan and, you know, say your prayers, take your vitamins. And, like, he would just, like, put such a good spin on it. The guy was just, like, hilarious and a great worker and, like, just thing. So, anyway, like, just watching that entrance and, like, seeing the Love Canada, like, poured on them. I thought was, like, definitely, like, the most special part for, like, me for the night. Yeah. Yeah.
No, oh, that rules.
That is good.
That's great. I'll keep it on a high note. I'll start with my high spot.
Yeah.
We'll end on a low note.
Ugh.
Why would you do that?
Well, because I don't want to ruin all of the great things that Josh just said.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
So my high spot was, I have written down camera work, but I think it's production as a whole. And I think it's a thing where... Watching this, like, I think it's like that state where they're doing the most with the technology that they have, or they're doing the most with what they're given. Okay. And that there's a lot of like angles that they use. Like, I can think of a few spots where it's like Mick Foley goes for like the punches to the head in the corner, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody's counting out the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's shot from below. It's this like grainy, yeah, kind of like 90s camera. Like, it's not HD.
Yeah.
It's the angle that they're shooting it from. It like, it's that thing where like you think about wrestlers as these like larger than life characters. Like, just the way that they're shot, like, makes them look like these larger than life characters that they always sort of claim to be. Like, the difference in camera work from how Mankind is hitting Hunter Hearst Helmsley in the head versus how like Roman would be hitting someone in the head, or like the difference in camera work for like an elbow drop to the outside, or the difference in camera work, like a lot of the way that they just shoot from under looking up.
Yeah.
I think part of it might be a little bit of like sort of rose tinted glasses, like nostalgia with the lack of HD and like that kind of like throwback, like it looks like a Muhammad Ali fight or something.
Yeah.
But it was really a thing where it was like going back and watching this, and it was like, these are the greats. You know, you're watching this as like, this is like the apex of this medium.
Yeah.
And these are the performers, and these are the characters that are really the biggest and the most grandiose.
And it's like, it's almost romanticized, right? Because, mm-hmm, you know, we look back at the Attitude Era with like these, like, you know, it's like, that was the greatest time in wrestling. And it's these iconic moments that we all remember, right? So it's like, you know, if we're looking at any highlight reels or anything like that, we all remember Mick Foley going off the cage.
Yeah.
We all remember like Austin with like the beer truck. We all remember like all of these moments. And like, this added, I think, so much to that like kind of lore, where it's like the Calgary Stampede with like the shaking camera, you know, like the camera angles and all that. I think it was just like, yeah, I think you're right.
And I think that's the big thing, is like, they're not doing like, when someone like hits a big move, they're not doing like a zoom in and zoom out.
Yeah, like speed up, slow down.
Like, it's presented very plainly as like, this is what it is. And sure, they're using angles and blocking and like positioning to gimmick it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's a thing where it's like, I go back and watch this and I'm like, man, like, I believe in this shit. You know, like, I believe in Mankind. I believe in what is happening in the ring
right now. And because it wasn't overproduced, you didn't feel like you're watching, like, an overproduced show.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Like, you're just, like, getting lost in, like, the wide shots they would do, and they just leave it on the ring for, like, you know, a few minutes.
Yeah.
Or, like you said, like, you'd switch to a cameraman outside and be, like, kind of like a real-time, like, reaction to, like, what was going on, and then the cameraman would shift and, like, zoom up to, like, the 10 punches, and, like, it was, like, it was very like Crash TV kind of, you know, mm-hmm, very fast moving. And you got immersed in that.
And I think it's the other thing, is that like, you allow yourself to be worked a little more, mm-hmm, when there's only like you have your hard camera, you have your like guy on the right side of the ring, and you have your guy on the left side of the ring.
Yeah.
And that's basically it, right?
Because I think it's like editing that doesn't call attention to itself.
Yeah.
Totally.
100%.
But you also allow yourself to believe like, that like, this is more of a sporting event. You allow yourself to believe that it's like, you know, like,
the same in hockey.
Yeah, like, it's like the NHL is like, you know, like, my dude Austin Matthews is going for like a shot, and it's like, when he takes a shot, it doesn't do a zoom in zoom out on the goalie. It's just like, it's a hard cam that they're just panning across, right? So I really, really liked the production. I really liked this throwback. Like, sure, maybe a lot of it was just nostalgia, and like, the angles and the aesthetic was very nostalgic.
There's something to be said about that, though. You guys with new eyes coming in and watching this old product, saying that, mm-hmm, really speaks to it. And it's like, not just like a nostalgic thing that I'm feeling.
Totally.
Rewatching this. Yeah. This is like something that actually worked.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
You know, and it's like, how far along do you have to be down this like overproduced product that you're putting out, that you're almost playing yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're putting so much money into it, so much time into it, you know, you're overworking it so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so really, at what point?
It, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Just let it be. My botched spot. This is going to kick Josh. This is going to hit Josh with an Undertaker low blow.
It's going to be Owen.
Well, the ref doesn't care, so go for it.
It's, I thought this whole Undertaker murder story was fucking bullshit.
Excuse me?
Like, in the context of the match, in the context of like The Undertaker versus Vader for the WWF Championship.
Yeah.
It didn't matter to Vader at all.
That is enough of a story.
No,
that is like, that's a thing where it's like, I wanted this to just be a clash of two titans. I wanted this to be two heavyweights fucking going at each other, having a like a big hoss fight. 305 Live again, you know? Like, and it was a thing where it was like they kept cutting back to this like Undertaker murdered his family story that was like, one, it was never resolved. Two, it was very much a thing that was like just between Paul Bearer and the Undertaker, and Vader felt ancillary. I felt like that match and the build and the people that were involved in that match deserved better than that story.
So there's a few things there. So one thing, Vader was ancillary. Like, he 100% was. So they were doing more like a hired gun thing. So Paul Bearer wasn't the long-term manager of Vader.
Right.
You know, Paul Bearer was bringing in hired guns to take out the Undertaker. And the longer story that they were telling was the eventual arrival of Kane.
Okay.
Right? So Kane was his brother. Paul Bearer is like, your brother survived.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's all we have at this point in this pay-per-view. They do mention that Paul Bearer said his brother lives.
Exactly. And that's part of like the longer storytelling arc that they were doing. So it's more of a disservice to Vader because they really didn't know what they were doing with Vader, right?
It's a disservice to Vader.
He's just a higher gun, right? Coming in.
It's a disservice to Vader, and it's a disservice to the belt. Like, In for what I said earlier was that like this match could have headlined any other pape, you know.
True.
This match could have headlined any other show, with the caveat that it needs to be about the belt. Like that you could have, I don't understand. Like the fact that Undertaker was the champion had nothing to do with that story. It didn't matter at all.
You know, originally it was supposed to be Ahmed Johnson.
It was, yeah, they did
like,
say that.
Like
yeah.
saying that he was supposed to be challenging, and like I think the idea was like you want all these like legitimate threats run at the Undertaker, and like the payoff was going to be Kane.
Yeah,
like getting back to that, but like but I mean WWF just never saw anything in Vader for whatever reason, and they should have, because Vader was like, he was a really good big man,
dude. That guy had his eye punched out and pushed it back in a match. Like,
took Mick Foley's ear.
Yeah,
like the reason why like part of his ear is missing is because of Vader. But yeah, again, like I think it says more to that, but also it's like it's telling a long story, right? Which I can appreciate. Just like seeing like how everything is paid off, you know, like in a month or like whatever the story is now in WWE.
I think it's a thing where it's like just the story didn't have it felt like they forgot about it by the end of the match.
Yeah.
Like it didn't have enough of, like it didn't resolve, which is fine. Not every story has to resolve at the end of a match. But it also didn't have anything that carried on that narrative. It felt like something that was like, they had three different ideas for that match that they like only committed halfway on each of them.
Yeah. And it's like, it's more of like a Paul Bearer goes back to the drawing board, sees what, like what else he can do until Kane eventually shows up.
Totally.
So
it's like,
I got it.
That was kind of my botch spot for the paper, where like going back and watching this again, we're talking about revisiting and seeing how things hold up.
Yeah.
And that this as like a chunk on its own didn't really hold up for me in that aspect.
That's fair. You're wrong, but it's fair.
Yeah, I don't know. It worked for me, but...
All right. So that was our take on our hot takes on In Your House Canadian Stampede, as voted by you, the Stone Cold Shots universe.
Thank you.
Like we said, we have another poll going on right now at facebook.com/StoneColdShots. So go and vote on that. Like, make your own suggestions in the comments.
And if you like and comment on the post, you can win a Stone Cold Shots can opener or apron.
Oh. What the fuck?
New merch. Check StoneColdShots.com.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We have 2 weeks to get this merch out. You can also... check us out on Instagram at Stone Cold Shots Podcast. You can hit us up on the email at StoneColdShotsPod@gmail.com. We will be back in 2 weeks with another great episode.
You can find us on Audio Boom. You can also find us on any podcasting app you have, like
Stitcher
iTunes.
Premium.
Hit us up Google with those Play. Five bald head ratings. Give us a review.
Give us that five balds.
Yeah.
Something I will not give.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe 4 7/8.
Yeah. please be a bit more judicious and a bit nicer with your ratings than Josh is.
Yeah, I got a lot of feelings.